KB, Portland.
KBOO is holding its monthly board of directors meeting live at KBOO Studios on Monday, October 24th, starting at 6 p.m. The public is invited to attend. Due to COVID concerns, masks and proof of vaccination are required for all persons. KBOO is located at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland. That's Monday, October 24th at 6 p.m. for the next board of directors meeting.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The following program is a rebroadcast. For all of KBOO's archived audio, please visit our website at kboo.fm.
Hold your head up, lift the top of your mind, put your eyes on the earth, lift your heart to your own home planet. What do you see? What is your
Good morning. This is Jacqueline Keeler, and this is the latest episode of American Standoff, which is a KBOO show which examines the current political divide going on today in America from an indigenous perspective, given by myself, Jacqueline Keeler, a native journalist based here in Oregon. And, you know, we, you know, as I always start the show off, you know, we started this show exactly a year to the day on the anniversary, basically, of the Capitol insurrection, the January 6, 2021 Capitol insurrection. And so we've been going through, you know, week by week, looking at different elements of the elements behind the insurrection. And as many of you know, that I am not only a journalist, but an author. And in my book Standoff, which came out last year, and you know, I really do look at and contrast sort of the motivations of the sort of what I call the colonial occupation and its adherents and its beneficiaries to revolt against the U.S. government versus that of indigenous-led sort of standoff, like we saw at Standing Rock. And my book contrasts the takeover of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge here in Oregon in February 2016, and then also the standoff north of Standing Rock, the Standing Rock Reservation in North Dakota, opposing the so-called Dakota Access Pipeline. And I say so-called because, you know, for Dakota people, my father is Dakota and a member of the Yankton Sioux tribe, that you know, Dakota is our word. It's what we use for ourselves to mean that we are allies and that we stand together as a people. Dakota and Lakota are the same people. They're just different dialects of the same language. And so so that's sort of the background of where I'm coming from for this show. Today's episode on American Standoff, we are looking at election deniers and the midterms. And this has been, you know, an ongoing sort of focus, election denialism, the big lie, whatever you'd like to call it. And so, you know, in this episode, we will take a look not only how election deniers are faring in the primaries, and we've done previous episodes looking at that more closely, both at the national level, each when the primaries occur, but also at specific states where you can kind of sense the Trump regime kind of, you know, like a truffle pig finding the weak point, finding the truffle, like where they can kind of penetrate the Democratic system. And these states that were troublesome to him, that would refuse to bow to his desire to find votes to make him president of the United States, these states have become the focus of sort of putting in place people who are loyal to him for the 2024 election. And that's what the midterms really are going to be about. And that's what we've been looking at. And last week we looked at Arizona specifically, because of course that state was one, that, along with Georgia and other states, they had officials that refused Trump's demands, and these were Republican officials. So these officials have been the focus of of Trump's ire and attempts to get them out of office and replace them with people who are loyal to him. And so and of course Arizona, the Republican Party there has really completely caved to Trump, not so much in Georgia. But yeah, so I am also Navajo, of the Navajo Nation, and so am I and my children. And so Arizona, a big chunk of the Navajo Nation is in Arizona. The Navajo Nation extends over three states, Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico. It's about the size of Ireland. And well, it is the size of Ireland. It's maybe a little larger than Ireland. So the Navajo Nation, for many tribes, federal funds can only be accessed through states, and it impacts the ability of Native nations to assert their own jurisdiction, like in the case of rights to privacy and to the rights to bodily autonomy and the rights to abortion. All these things, even though state laws do not apply within the jurisdiction of Native nations, they still have an impact on how they can deliver those services and the funding that goes to those services. So Native nations do have a big stake in who's running a state government and how that impacts them. So I was very concerned, and I was actually down in Arizona last weekend and talking to folks and were reporting about that on the ground during the midterms, during the election. So I'll be doing more on that. But we looked at that more closely last week. This show, we're not just looking at how the election deniers are faring in the primaries, but how the framework of denialism is playing out, right? So it works on many levels. You know, you have the candidates who are running who are declaring that they don't believe that Biden is president and that the presidency was stolen from Trump, which is not true. But there's also, folks, kind of working on the ground, ordinary volunteers, who are going to be showing up at polling sites, even in blue states or blue polling places, and you'll hear more audio reporting on this. And then also how we want to look at how our American voters responding. What are the polls saying? So let's open this show with some reporting on how election deniers have been doing. So we got a little short snippet on that.
Will of the voters in choosing presidential electors. And then Mark Fincham, who is a member of the far-right group, the Oath Keepers, he's also running, and he previously introduced legislation there to decertify the 2020 election results in Arizona. He has the endorsement also, I should say, of former President Trump.
And what about the primaries that have already happened? Republicans in a number of states, I believe, have already nominated election deniers to those sorts of positions.
That's right. In five states, Alabama, Nevada, New Mexico, Indiana, and Michigan, election deniers are set to be on the ballot in November for positions that oversee voting. Some of those, I should note, are very key swing states looking ahead to 2024. All of this has election experts really terrified. I talked to Tammy Patrick, who's a former election official in Arizona and now a senior advisor at Democracy Fund. She told me this is a scary moment for democracies everywhere.
We're not just talking about the United States here. I talked to election officials all around the world, and they say to me things like, "We turn to you to set the standard and the bar. And if you're struggling after having been a democracy for hundreds of years, what hope do we have?"
We know from the past 2 years that people who believe the 2020 election was stolen use that false narrative to justify things like stripping back voting access and trying to question election protocols that don't actually have any problems with them. So it's obviously fair to wonder what kind of policies these sorts of people would implement should they be elected.
But I know election deniers aren't winning everywhere. In Georgia, incumbent Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger beat Jody Heiss, who was a Trump-endorsed election denier, in the Republican primary there.
That's right. Election denial is not some sort of golden ticket in these Republican primaries. An organization called States United Action has been tracking these races and other positions that are involved in elections, like attorney general and governor races across the country. And they found that election deniers in Republican primaries are actually losing more often than they're winning, which does give voting experts some hope about the state of the Republican Party. But Joanna Lydgate, who runs States United, said even one of these deniers winning a Secretary of State race in November could present a big problem.
The truth is that a single election denier in a single state could throw our elections into chaos, could put our democracy at risk.
She said you only need to look at a state like Georgia in 2020 when former President Trump called then Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger to try to get him to, quote, find votes to see just how disruptive it could be for our entire democratic system should one of these election deniers win.
Today I hear some reporting about how election deniers have been doing and the concern that this has raised. I definitely recommend checking out the website States United Democracy Center. I think the statesunitedemocracy.org, and they have some really great overviews.
And it goes
Hello? But you can really keep track of how they're doing and learn more about the role of Secretary of State as well in overseeing our elections. And so I'd like to also I always begin the show by doing a land acknowledgement. And here on the show, we are about sort of understanding the present situation. How do we come to be at this place, this very divided political place, and really the origins, where that lies in American history. And because as I note in my book Stand Up, that I see these things as having origins in origin stories, a people's origin stories, whether it's a colonial people or it's a native people, right? And I do see those as having very distinct factors that define them, which I call algorithms, and that these algorithms have outcomes. And so I definitely see origins in colonialism, which have these underlying assumptions of white supremacy, of a profit motive, of occupation, of domination, of an authority, kind of a elite power structure, to be in great contrast to that with the sort of origin stories and organizing principles that go behind a native nation's idea of itself, which I see vested in a relationship to the land itself. And I think I quote my grandmother's cousin, Fine Deloria Jr., who was a well-known Standing Rock Sioux Lakota historian, where he says that a people, meaning an indigenous people, having an origin story based in a relation, based in a meeting with a spiritual being who's a manifestation of land itself. And in that meeting, agreements are made. We don't have some God-given right to exploit the land. We speak to the land, and it's a specific area on earth. It's not, it's not like a global corporate entity which can just go anywhere and not have to face the outcomes of its actions. We are subject to those outcomes because we live in a limited space and our homelands are limited. And so that agreement is not made just with the land, but with the other people in the land, which includes not just human people, but animals and the fish, the birds, and the plants as well. So it's a really different organizing principle that leads to really different outcomes. And so that's part of the very the essence of this show, let's say. So I would just like to also urge you to call in. I know that sometimes these topics can be a bit intimidating, but please feel free to call in. I love to hear from you guys. The number here at the studio is 503-231-8187. And I also like to greet you all in my own language, in the Nepazad, and also to say in the Navajo way, my clans, and which is the way we traditionally introduce ourselves in Navajo. And my clan is Kia Ani Nishlis, I am born for the and I'm born for the Ihastuwan Dakota, the Yankton Sioux people, my father's people. We are matrilineal, so the clan I inherit comes from my mother and my mother's mother. And so I'd also like to acknowledge that we now call Portland, Oregon, is located on the ancestral lands of the Multnomah, Wasco, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Cowlitz bands of Chinook, Tualatin, Kaiapuya, Molalla, and many other tribes. And I have to say that the ancestral lands, I to me, these are still their lands. And in the same way I view that connection as being, as defining a people, this is part of the essence of who they are. And so, so just encourage you all to call in. So the next audio that I have is actually dealing with another aspect of it, which I said, you know, it goes beyond the election of believers in the Big Lie, but it also goes to the level in which they are recruiting poll watchers and what they are telling these poll watchers to believe. And so the I think the NPR did a piece on September 1st looking at poll watchers who are primed with disinformation. And so there's an increase in poll watchers and poll observers in the lead up to the midterms. And they are being trained and basically how to sort of let's listen to the audio right now. This is from Consider This, Recruiting Poll Watchers.
Officials. Conservatives who pushed false claims about the last election are recruiting volunteer poll watchers.
Good morning, everyone.
Leaked audio shared with NPR and other news organizations pulls back the curtain on an effort led by one of the lawyers who worked on Trump's effort to overturn the 2020 election.
We are taking the lessons we learned in 2020 and we are going forward to make sure they never happen again, ever.
So at least eight states are set to have Republican Secretary of State candidates on the ballot who deny the results of the 2020 presidential election. Republicans nominated candidates for Attorney General, Senate, Governor, and Secretary of State who all embrace former President Trump's election lies. Carrie Lake, who won the nomination for governor, made voter fraud claims in her own race, though she provided zero evidence. Here she is on KTAR.
We are on to some things that are very suspicious and possibly illegal, and we're working on it, and I don't want to ruin the investigation.
She has been conspicuously silent on those claims since she won. Mark Fincham, the nominee for Secretary of State, is a member of the far-right extremist group called the Oath Keepers. He was at the U.S. Capitol during the January 6th insurrection, though he says he did not go inside. The fact that several key swing states could have top election officials who have embraced the lie of widespread fraud, it has voting experts terrified.
The stakes are enormous.
That's Rick Hassan, director of the Safeguarding Democracy Project at UCLA. He was speaking with the NPR show 1A.
The 2020 election could be seen as the low point in modern American democracy, or it could be seen as a test run for 2024. And I'm afraid it's likely to be the latter.
Some election deniers have used the false claim that the 2020 election was stolen as justification to cut back on ballot drop boxes and other forms of early voting. In some of the same states where Trump has endorsed election deniers for office, there's another effort underway, backed by key figures in his orbit. A lawyer who worked on Trump's effort to overturn the 2020 election is now trying to mobilize a volunteer army of poll watchers. Her summits have included top officials from the Republican Party, alongside at least one activist who's promoted the QAnon conspiracy theory. NPR investigative correspondent Tom Dreisbach got access to leaked audio of one of those events. Here's what he learned.
Everybody in the back, take your seats.
Back in March of this year, in a hotel just outside Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, people gathered for what was billed as an election integrity summit. It was officially nonpartisan, but the audience seemed clearly pro-Trump.
Okay, I got some good news. Donald Trump did not lose Pennsylvania. He did not lose Pennsylvania. Why?
That's Doug McClinko, a county commissioner from Pennsylvania who wants to eliminate mail-in voting in the state. He said proudly that he voted against certifying the 2020 election. This event was put on by a longtime conservative election lawyer named Cleta Mitchell.
We are taking the lessons we learned in 2020 and we are going forward to make sure they never happen again, ever.
If the name Cleta Mitchell sounds familiar, it's probably because of this phone call.
So what are we going to do here, folks? I only need 11,000 votes. Fellas, I need 11,000 votes. Give me a break.
This is from January 2nd, 2021. President Trump pressured Georgia election officials to overturn the state's election results. Trump brought Cleta Mitchell as backup.
What I don't understand is why it wouldn't be in everyone's best interest to try to get to the bottom, compare the numbers, to try to be able to get to the truth.
According to the Congressional Committee investigating January 6th, Mitchell had also suggested a plan to submit alternate slates of pro-Trump electors. Since then, a prosecutor in Georgia has subpoenaed her as part of a criminal investigation into Trump's efforts to overturn the election. While those investigations have been pushing ahead, Mitchell has a new position with a D.C. nonprofit led, in part, by Mark Meadows, Trump's last White House chief of staff. It's called the Conservative Partnership Institute.
And now I get to work on election integrity every single day.
Trump's Political Action Committee donated $1 million to the Conservative Partnership Institute, and the group appears to keep close ties with Trump campaign staffers, like Mike Roman.
I was on Trump's campaign. I was on in 16, I was on in 20, hopefully I'll be on in 24 if he hires me.
Like Mitchell, the House Select Committee investigating January 6th has subpoenaed Roman. In his case, congressional investigators said he was part of a coordinated strategy to send fake slates of pro-Trump electors to the Electoral College, a strategy that was not discussed at the event. The summit also featured figures closer to the far right.
With that, I would like to recognize Tony Shoup, who is CEO of Audit Pennsylvania.
Tony Shoup of Audit the Vote Pennsylvania was introduced as the leader of the state's conservative election integrity coalition. She attended the pro-Trump Stop the Steal rally in Washington on January 6th and was outside the Capitol during the riot. At this event, she led the group in a Pledge of Allegiance and a Christian prayer.
That you will guide the leadership that is in this room to restore integrity, liberty, and freedom to this great country so that you can get all the glory. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Amen.
Shoup has said that her path to activism started with a 10-part, 3-hour online video that promoted conspiracy theories from 9/11 to QAnon and the bizarre theory called Pizzagate.
Pizzagate is real.
In an email, Shoup said that she did not believe everything in the video, but that it was a compelling argument that opened her eyes. I asked her about this startling moment.
Worldwide, children are stolen and sold to elite pedophile rings. The murderers then drink the children's blood and they eat their flesh.
Shoup told me she did not know if those specific claims were true, but called it a great question. She suggested that NPR should spend some time digging into it.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Back at the event, the real focus was on the next election. Volunteers heard from Ned Jones, who works with Cleta Mitchell at the Conservative Partnership Institute, and he walked through part of a step-by-step guide to monitoring elections. Jones said one step involved filing Freedom of Information Act requests to local election offices.
It does two things. It gets you information that otherwise you wouldn't get, but it puts all of them on notice that you're watching.
Jones is active on social media. On January 6th, Jones saw a tweet about the breach of the Capitol building and responded, quote, "It's our turn. About time." He's tweeted several times about a coming civil war. At this event, Jones's rhetoric was more muted.
Scrutiny and exposure are the tools that we have.
Keeping up the pressure on election officials was a theme throughout, though Mitchell herself stressed the importance of remaining polite, not losing your cool. A conservative activist named Christine Brim said it was important for volunteers to concentrate on heavily blue areas, like her home in Fairfax County, Virginia.
Our job is not to win. Our job is to lose less badly. And when you're the blue county that can ruin a statewide vote, that really focuses what you're doing.
Now, alongside these activists at the event, and drawing on this volunteer energy, there were also two officials with the Republican National Committee, including the party's national director for, quote, election integrity. They praised Mitchell as the best election law expert out here and emphasized that these volunteer poll watchers and election workers would help provide intelligence to the party war room by identifying issues that the party could include in legal challenges. Here's Andrea Raffel, the RNC's Director of Election Integrity for Pennsylvania.
If we can even get one Republican in every precinct, that means we have eyes in every precinct automatically. And you're there doing those official duties, making sure that everything is running smoothly in that precinct.
This event in Pennsylvania is one of several across the country, including Wisconsin, North Carolina, Michigan. Mitchell has said they're building an army of patriots to monitor elections.
And with that, thank you, and God bless you, and God bless America.
It's not concerning or even really unusual for political groups to mobilize volunteers to help watch the polls or ask questions of election officials. That's democracy. But experts say it is concerning when people behind the mobilization believe conspiracy theories about the last election. Brendan Fisher is the deputy executive director of a group called Documented, which investigates the influence of corporations and wealthy people in politics. They obtained the tape of this event and shared it with NPR.
The concern is that the conspiracy theorists who see fraud around every corner are going to disrupt voting and the administration of elections.
Some longtime Republicans, like David Hoppe, have also been raising the alarm about the spread of the big lie. Hoppe is a former chief of staff for House Speaker Paul Ryan and part of a group of conservatives behind a report called Lost, Not Stolen, which debunks false election fraud claims.
If you start saying, gee, I was cheated just because you don't like to lose, that undermines the system. It really does go to the heart of a representative democracy.
There you're hearing reporting on sort of how they're mobilizing poll watchers to basically disrupt democracy. And you could hear at the end there, towards the end, one of the women saying that she lives in a blue precinct, but she's still going to work to try to marginally improve the Republican outcome there, the far right outcome. I definitely recommend checking out the Documented website. It's documented.net, and they've got really great updates on things that they've received. The lead piece they have on there now is Dark Money Group Weaponizes State Treasurers in Attacks on Climate Policy. Another one is Jenny Thomas emails. They have the emails themselves. Jenny Thomas emails to Wisconsin lawmakers urging them to overturn the 2020 election. That was another big thing. I think I might take a deep dive into Jenny Thomas at some point. That is the role of the Supreme Court and what's going on there is a big part of this as well, because they could play a big role in obviously allowing a lot of they've had a big role in basically neutralizing the Voting Rights Act and the guarantees that we've had for the last more than 50 years that people will have access to the vote. And so so I definitely recommend checking out that site, and they were the ones that had leaked that audio of that meeting that the NPR reported on. And another person mentioned in that reporting is Cleta Mitchell, right? And she actually, surprisingly enough, began as a Democratic representative to the Oklahoma House of Representatives, elected in 1976 when she was only 26 years old. She served there until 1984. But in 1996, she became a Republican. And she does have really mainstream cred. She's done a lot of legal work as an attorney in D.C., and she was part of the pro-term limits group. And then she also has counseled a lot of mainstream Republicans. She's been their legal counsel. And Elizabeth Dole, even Tom Cole from Oklahoma, who is a Republican, but he's also a citizen of the Chickasaw Nation there. And she does have the real support of the RNC. So this is not as fringe as you would think. This is instigated by Trump, but it has the support of a lot of mainstream Republican the structure of the Republican Party, and it's quite concerning what they're doing, and Actually, in 2021, she was also in charge. She took a central role in coordinating Republican efforts to tighten voting laws. FreedomWorks put her in charge of a $10 million initiative to push for voting restriction and train conservatives in local elections. This is in addition to the $1 million she's received from Trump. And then and she also put up an escrow fund to funnel money to companies conducting a pro-Trump audit into the 2020 election. And, of course, she took part in that one-hour phone call with Trump to try to pressure Georgia's Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger on January 2nd, 2021, to find more votes for him to win. These people, it's not just Oath Keepers, which is a big part of it. We'll go into some more of that as well. There's another recent sort of leak on that about who belongs to the Oath Keepers that came out recently. We're going to share some audio. But I'd also once again like to encourage you all to call in and to let me know what you think about this and what you plan to do to try to address the issue. The number here in the studio is 503-231-8187. And I'm Jacqueline Keeler, your host. And so let's go to the next bit of audio we have here. I'm looking at a poll that came out recently where two-thirds of independents say they don't want Trump to run for president. Let's listen to that.
The FBI search of former President Trump's Florida estate has thrust him back into the spotlight as he continues to hint at another run for president in 2024.
We're going to take back America. Take back America. And in 2024, most importantly, we are going to take back our magnificent White House.
While that statement drew some loud cheers at a rally in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania.
That's all there was in that one.
Oh, sorry, I'm still muted there. Sorry. So, yeah, that was a short one there. I think we didn't get the full audio there. But let's go through some of what that poll had. 67% of independents do not want Trump to run again, while just 28% said they do. So this is from a new NPR PBS News Marist poll that this was released like yesterday. In 2016, he did fare better with the group, with the independent voters, that support has just declined throughout his presidency, and he's never been able to regain that level of support from independents that he had in 2016, and he is heavily unpopular outside his base, nationally, overall, 33% of American voters say yes. They want Trump to run, and 61% say no. And by party, 90% of Democrats say they don't want Trump to run, 9% say yes. Republican voters, however, are sort of outliers in this. They 67% say they want Trump to vote, 26% say no, and 7% are unsure. So they are like the exact reverse of the American population in general. And then independents say 28% want him to run, and 67% say they do not want him to run. And if you divide it by ethnicity, it's definitely, I don't know, it's much closer than you'd expect. 34% of white voters say they want him to run. And 60% of white voters say they do not want him to run. 6% are undecided. And with non-white voters, 32% say they want him to run, and 65% say they do not want him to run. So, and looking at other demographical breakouts in this, white evangelical Christians are, of course, very strong supporters of Trump, and 52% want him to run. 39% say no, which is a bit surprising because that's 40%, and 8% say they don't they're undecided. So that's nearly half that are undecided or don't support him running. That's more than I would have expected, honestly. So that's an interesting take. I mean, he did get a bit of bump after the FBI raid. He had gotten his score had decreased during the hearings, the televised January 6th hearings, but then he did get a bump after the FBI search. And but how there's interesting aspects of this. When respondents were asked if they would want Trump to run again, even if he is charged with the crime, right, because of the things taken, the percentage saying no only increased marginally to 65%. So for people who support Trump, even him being criminally charged doesn't really shake their support very much, right? And then another 17. So when it comes to the FBI search, a plurality, 44% of respondents said they think Trump did something illegal. Another 17% think he did something unethical, but not illegal. Nearly 30% maintain he did nothing wrong, including 63% of Republicans. So 63% of Republicans believe that he didn't do anything wrong by taking those national security documents out of the White House or out of, D.C. and holding them in the basement of Mar-a-Lago, which reports say was actually a hotbed for spies. And some of these include incredibly top secret documents, and they're not supposed to be viewed outside of a safe place. So it's a secure area. So, yeah. And so two-thirds of basically the final takeaway is two-thirds of Republicans say they want Trump to run again, and a whopping 61% of them said they still want him to run even if he's charged with a crime. And so I think I've been meaning to really do a show that's not so topically based, but news-based, but to really look at sort of what is the mentality of the American voter, and let's be honest, these are mostly white American voters that that have this view, like maybe to just deconstruct that a bit. And obviously I believe that is deeply tied to the origin story of the colonial origin story that is, of course, buttressed by the concepts of white supremacy, of domination, of a profit margin. I've really been wanting to dig a deep dive on that, and I think I will this next show. So that's sort of what we're looking at there. There is some good news this week. Steve Bannon surrendered today over new charges. Let's listen to a little brief audio on that.
Clemency to during his final hours in office, a fact that I had a sort of memory hold a little bit, to be honest, was his one-time campaign chairman, later White House advisor, Steve Bannon. Now, Bannon was arrested by federal agents back in the summer of 2020, accused of defrauding Trump supporters. These are diehard Trump-loving donors, defrauding them out of millions of dollars. Donors believed they were giving money towards the construction of a wall along the Mexican border to fulfill the promise that Trump had not. And the money didn't do that. But then Trump came along, wiped Bannon's charges away with a stroke of the pen, as he is empowered to do by the US Constitution, clearing the way for Bannon to take on a new role, which was key sponsor of Trump's attempted coup. Or at least he was doing that while Trump was preparing to wipe it away. Now, Bannon may be back in legal jeopardy, reportedly for the same crime, this time under a state indictment, New York State, by the Manhattan District Attorney. According to the Washington Post, quote, the precise details of the state case could not be confirmed, but people familiar with the situation suggest the prosecution will likely mirror aspects of the federal case in which he was pardoned. In a statement, Bannon said the district attorney was pursuing, quote, phony charges, adding, I have not yet begun to fight. But just a short time ago, CNBC got word from Bannon's lawyer that he was, quote, en route to surrender.
As I mentioned, he has already surrendered today, and these are state charges that he had previously, that seem to mirror federal charges that he that Trump had given him clemency for before he left office. And of course, it's all about building the wall. So that is some good news. Some more good news, just to sort of give some of that, which I don't seem to view enough of on this show, is the news that a judge in New Mexico has removed and barred Coy Griffin from elected office. Let's listen to that. Do we have the audio for that? It's the audio clip number 5.
Good afternoon. A judge has ruled that Otero County Commissioner Coy Griffin must be removed from office immediately and can't hold public office again. Judge Francis Matthew found the Cowboys for Trump founder became disqualified from holding public office on January 6, 2021, when he took part in the insurrection at the Capitol. Coy Griffin has maintained that he never entered the Capitol, never took part in any violence, and was only convicted of misdemeanor trespass. And he didn't know he couldn't stand where he did. But the citizens who brought the lawsuit seeking to remove him from office felt differently, arguing he violated the 14th Amendment by engaging in an insurrection. And the judge agreed. He ordered Griffin removed from his position as Otero County Commissioner, effective immediately.
So there you hear some good news. And Coy Griffin was a served as county commissioner for Otero County, New Mexico, which includes actually the Mescalero Apache Reservation. And he was the commissioner there from 2019 to 2022. And so they removed him from office this month under the disqualification clause of the 14th Amendment. And he also, as what you heard in the reporting, was a founding member of the activist group Cowboys for Trump, which had originally about 13 members, and they rode on horseback at political events and protests. And as you know from my coverage of the Bundys, you know, I do a lot of analysis of this sort of cowboy iconography, right? And how it's utilized by right-wing extremists and its roots and sort of how the land was taken from Native people. And that's why I see a lot of this far-right extremist militarized response, armed extremist response, to be tied to a sort of an assertion of colonial rights. Many of you may not know this, but the Bundys actually wanted to come to Standing Rock. Yeah, and so they were not allowed to come because their idea that they have, and this goes back to the original article I wrote about the Clive and Bundy, the father, and his standoff in Nevada against the Bureau of Land Management in 2014. And in that article I wrote for The Nation, the title was, challenging, I can't remember the exact title, but sort of challenging his claimed rights to the land, which he claimed were, he had the original rights to the land, which totally ignoring the tribes there in the, that occupied the land, that whose homeland he occupies, I should say. And his family had been an active sort of opposition to Native Nations' attempts to protect some of their sacred sites, including Gold Butte there near the Bundy Ranch in Clark County, Nevada, and also Bears Ears as well. His son Ryan Bundy joined Republican politicians to ride ATVs over ancient Pueblo villages, archaeological sites and stuff, in opposition to having that not being allowed to, right? They should be allowed to run over, to ride their vehicles over ancient archaeological sites that are 10 to 15,000 years old, you know, because heck, you know, the Pueblo people, who cares about them, right? That's in the past. In fact, that's exactly a quote from Ryan Bundy himself, who was the brother of Ammon Bundy, who led the occupation of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge. And in my covering of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge, I note that I did a lot of coverage on that in Indian country today from the perspective of the burnt Paiute tribe here in Oregon, and just the devastation, how devastating it was for them to have a sacred site there, the Malheur Wildlife Refuge, where there's lots of archaeological sites. They actually were digging the Bundys and their occupying group. They dug big pits for outhouses and stuff, and right into where the bones were buried. It was horrific. Yeah. So anyway, these are not people that really care about Native issues. And
we have a caller.
Oh, hi. Yes.
Arthur.
Hello, caller.
Oh, hello. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Hey, great. Thank you for your discussion. I'm so much better informed. Thank you so much. I just have a quick question. I'm going to take off the answer off the air, but hold on a second. Here's my question. During that capital invasion, two policemen were murdered.
Yes.
Two policemen were murdered, and I'm going to take the answer off the air, but you tell me who went to jail for that. Thank you.
Okay, so I have to admit that I don't have at the top of my head, like, all following all the different what the outcomes of different these different cases have been. But people have gone to jail for things, but I know that it's been a really traumatic and terrible event. I will get back to you on that. I think I would like to do a show actually looking at how all those cases are proceeding, because there are so many of them. And some of them were brought up during the hearings, the January 6th hearings. And of course, Capitol officers testified at those hearings about the trauma they endured. I'm sorry, but I will get back to you on that. And I'd love to answer any questions people have about the topic of the show today, which is about election denialism and the threat democracy that poses with the midterms. And so, but thank you so much for calling in, and I will do a show on it. In fact, I really would like to take a look at that, actually. I'd like to thank the caller. I'd like to also look at some other ways in which looking back at sort of this complicity, there was some video recently released of an ex-Georgia official. Well, actually, let's skip that one because I think we're running up against the time. But there, videos released recently of an ex-Georgia official escorting Trump operatives into the election offices on the very day that this was in 2020, that election office was breached, right? And so that's just another example of sort of how they're operating on many levels. And it's hard to keep track of them all or to prevent them all, but they are very, very active, these sort of election denial volunteers, even, and some of them who are actually elected officials. So, but let's skip to this new report that came out on an extremist group, I think the Oath Keepers, which shows
leading the charge to keep the Capitol building, to keep Trump in power. There were two violent, racist, extremist groups, the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. Like Donald Trump, the Oath Keepers were spurred into action after Barack Obama was elected president. The group launched in the year 2009, in April. They recruited members throughout Obama's first term in office. Their tactics became more aggressive and more violent in 2014 after Obama's reelection and that notorious standoff against the federal government at Bundy Ranch. Since then, the Oath Keepers have evolved from an obscure group to a household name, a primary example of anti-government extremism, a group that literally stormed the seat of democracy in an effort to keep its chosen candidate in power against the will of the American people. Today, a judge declined to delay the trial of the leader of the Oath Keepers for seditious conspiracy. That first trial will now go ahead 3 weeks from now, as planned. Also today, the Anti-Defamation League Center on Center on Extremism, released this report unmasking just who the Oath Keepers really are. The ADL combed through more than 38,000 names listed on leaked Oath Keeper membership lists. And what did they find? They found that more than 370 members who work in law enforcement, they found more than 100 members who are actively in the military, and more than 80 members who are either running for or serving in public office as of August of this year. And it's more than just those demographics. The Oath Keepers membership list included religious figures, teachers, civil engineers, firefighters, EMTs, people from all parts of American society. All of which raises fresh concerns about the ability of this kind of anti-government extremist group to seep into our law enforcement, into our government, into our daily lives.
So that's the reporting there on the Anti-Defamation League's recent re-release report. You can find it on their website, adl.org, and it's the Oath Keepers Data Leak, Unmasking Extremism in Public Life. And this was published, according to their website, on just a few days ago, on September 6, 2022. And this is a data leak that they obtained, which revealed the information of thousands of people whose names were in an Oath Keeper database as having paid for a membership. The Oath Keepers are an anti-government extremist group associated with the militia movement. And so they have a really great interactive map here that allows you to see sort of who is a member in your area. And so some of the major takeaways from this are that they identified 300, the Center on Extremism, which is a part of the ADL, identified 373 individuals who they believe are currently serving in law enforcement agencies across the country. And this number is far higher than any previously identified number of extremists within law enforcement. For comparison, an ADL report released in 2021, just last year, 76 cases, 70 of three which were unique, in which extremists were found serving in law enforcement. So this is 373, an additional 300. ADL identified individuals we believe are currently holding senior leadership positions within their respective agencies, including at least 10 chiefs of police and 11 sheriffs. In addition to those actively serving in law enforcement, ADL identified more than 1,000 individuals who we believe previously served in law enforcement. And so it's 1,000. This is, of course, people who are paid members of the Oath Keepers, a, quote, virulently anti-government, violent extremist group whose members have been arrested in connection with a wide range of criminal activities, including seditious conspiracy and other charges related to the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, and including various firearms violations, conspiracy to impede federal workers, possession of explosives, and threatening public officials. You may remember from the coverage we've done during the January 6th hearings that some of the information released during the hearings found that they were they had actually had a stockpile of weapons ready to offsite. So this is the group of these police law enforcement members have been part of, including 10 chiefs of police and 11 sheriffs. So they also, ADL Center on Extremism Analysis identified 81 individuals across the country who are currently holding or running for public office in 2022. So this runs from local office, from mayors, town council members, school board members, to state representatives and senators. And so prior to this year's primary season, ADL confirmed 42 Oath Keepers, aligned individuals who were up for election for public office in 2022, consisting of 22 incumbents and 20 candidates. And as of August 8th, 21 of these candidates have advanced to the general election, either by winning their primary or having their primary canceled. 13 of the candidates have lost their primary race. Even more concerning, 4 individuals have already won their general election. So these are Oath Keepers, people who have paid Oath Keeper membership who are in positions of political power now. And then ADL identified 117 individuals who we believe currently serve in the U.S. military, an additional 11 people who serve in the reserves, and 31 individuals who hold civilian positions or are military contractors. So the military's role in these sort of extremist groups, we had the Patriot Prayer folks marching in Portland back in August, September 2018. I did interview some of them on site when they were there at the Waterfront Park, and particularly focused on men of color who were members, right? And they told me that they had joined because they had come back from serving overseas in the military. They were hanging out with their buddies, playing video games, and they just began to really go down this sort of route that led them to becoming members of a right-wing armed militia group. And so that's something to consider. So, in addition to those serving currently in the military, ADL estimates that 1 in 10 of the individuals in the database previously served in the military in some capacity. So that's fully 10% of the Oath Keeper membership has served in the military. So, and then they also identified 86 individuals who are firefighters, including several fire chiefs, as well as 19 active paramedics and 31 emergency technicians. So the Oath Keepers have used disaster relief to garner positive attention for their group, and these professionals have skills that can bolster these efforts. So, they give some examples. Arizona State Senator Wendy Rogers, a self-proclaimed member of the Oath Keepers, she has remained a supporter despite their alleged participation in the January 6th attack. And in March 2021, just 2 months after the insurrection, she met with the Cottonwood Oath Keepers and praised the group for their, quote, dedication to our Constitution and to our country. And one individual who listed an address on an Air Force base described himself as, quote, a vocal advocate of instilling among junior officers and NCOs their allegiance to the Constitution and the American people, not the government, especially the president. We are apolitical with a charge to defend inalienable rights. So that sounds kind of okay, but then you realize that it's leading them to to basically deny the vote of the will of the people and to storm the Capitol. They have Idaho State Representative Chad Christensen, who was in the Oath Keepers database. He had a Liberty Tree membership, but he has already named himself as an Oath Keeper in his official legislative bio. So if you go to his bio in the Idaho State Legislature, you'll see that he's a proud Oath Keeper member. And however, he lost his primary race this year. So and then Lieutenant Philip Mercurio, who is the city of Pittsburgh's Public Safety Department. He works there. He's a firearms instructor. Said that he would spread the word, quote, he would spread the word to my students. So he's going to, in the wake of the Oath Keepers data link, the lieutenant was reassigned to an administrative assignment pending an investigation. So those are just some of the different highlights. I can go on and on. We're almost out of time for the show. But, of course, they mentioned that Stuart Rhodes is, his case is proceeding. And, so they have seemed to be hand in glove with this whole movement to overturn the election. And so, like I said, this whole denialism, this election denialism, this big lie has many facets, and they're all operating at once, and they're happening all over the country. And they are informing their people on how to act, how to get a FOIA request, how to disrupt the election process. And I have to say that in my coverage of the far right, looking at the Bundys, I was really surprised at the level at which, a family that isn't educated, owns a fairly small amount of land, 160 acres in Clark County, how they were sort of tied into the system enough to do things like, I think Ammon Bundy got $500,000 federal small business loan. These things that, as a Native woman, I don't think that Native families are that aware of how to use the system, right? I think that even uneducated white families in these counties know how, because they've been in charge of the county system serving in these positions, they have a better idea of how to manipulate the system in their favor. And they've done it. Well, I mean, this is their system, you know, of occupation. This is how they administer the occupation of our lands. And so I think that this is part of the perspective I bring as a Native journalist, is that, you know, I don't know any Native families that know how to do this stuff, honestly. And that's, maybe we do need to learn how to operate the system.
Hold your head up, lift the top of your mind, put your eyes on the earth, lift your heart to your own home planet. What do you see? What is your attitude? Are you here?
This is Granny D. I'm talking from KBOO, Portland. I come from Dublin, New Hampshire, and I go across the country working for public funding at the state level. And I often hear about KBOO on